Hey everybody, this is GNU World Order, episode 13 of season 11. This is the third week in a row. It's amazing. This is going really, really well, I think. So this is a short little episode, but as I've said before, that's the idea every week, short episode. So here it is. Let's get into it. You've probably heard this little cliche that I want to talk about, and the cliche is that open source applications are poorly designed. In terms of the UI, or the UX, as modern people are given to call it. So in other words, the interface, the way that you, as a user, experience an application, is poorly designed, often, in open source applications. Okay, so this is a big, crazy issue, and I love to talk about it. You know I love to talk about it, because I've talked about it before. I mean, you know, if you've listened to this show a lot. And I've talked about this kind of thing. You know, what is intuitive design? What does that mean, really? How do we know an intuitive application when we see it? How can we call it that? Things like that. That's a great topic, and I love to just kind of ramble on about it. And that's not what I'm going to do necessarily right now, but I could. But I'm not going to. What I want to talk about right now is application interface design and what people sort of mean when they say, oh, open source software looks really, it's badly designed. So I think that what we really are saying and what we're really hearing when people hit us with that are a couple of different things. And one of those things is, so someone says, oh, open source software, that's badly designed. Well, what they really mean there is that it looks ugly. Or something like that. So whatever ugly is to them, yeah? So a lot of people, they have associations with different platforms that they grew up with. So if they grew up on Mac, then anything that looks like a Windows application to them is ugly. It kind of has a funky feeling, It's like, Windows, I don't feel comfortable with that. It's uncomfortable. So if an open source application looks too Windowsy, then it's a bad thing, and vice versa. If they grew up with Windows, they may see themselves as kind of expert computerists. They think of Mac users as people who don't really understand computers. They're not serious about computers, so they look at something from open source, and it's from GNOME 3, and it looks super simplified, and it doesn't have any buttons anywhere, and everything's been collapsed into one little global, or not global, but one little hamburger menu up in the top right. Hamburger, the menu with three lines on it, people call it a hamburger menu. Then suddenly, it's too Mac-like, it's not a, it's not power user type of application, it's ugly. Or it hides all of its options, it's ugly. So a lot of times when people are saying that something's badly designed, what they really mean is that it does not appeal to them. It's simple. It's easy. Now, other times people are talking about it's over complex. So sort of what I think most people think they are, that's the cliche, is that oh, all open source applications are designed by committee, so you have 20 different buttons and 30 different text fields and 80 different tabs, and you just can't, it's basically like you're writing a command, except you're not doing it in a terminal, you're doing it in an application. And I've seen those applications. I've definitely seen those. I mean, 100% I've seen them. The very first application that I ever used that was open source, well, that's not true, but the very sort of the one that really made an impression on me was FFmpeg X, and it was a GUI interface. I think you can still find this application online, if I'm not mistaken. It was a visual kind of interface written for a Mac that was supposed to give you, yep, here it is, FFmpegX.com, and according to this, it looks like it was last updated on 2011. But the one that I saw was, quite a while ago, back in 2005, probably. And, in fact, let me look. It says on their webpage, 2002 is when they started. So, I might have started using this thing back then, because this was an early application that I discovered, and it was the one application that got me. I just made so much money off of this thing, because people wouldn't know how to transcode video, and the tools on a Mac at the time. Well, still, what am I talking about at the time? As if though it's all gotten better. The tools on a Mac could not handle it. It would not encode anything really, except from like an M4A, which was, their X264 container. Or their container for X264, H264 files, and and maybe it would go from there to like a .mov. That was like the breadth of the Mac conversion process, and so people would pay me money to figure out how to transcode their MPEG-2 file, to something that their Mac could actually read, and I would just throw it into FFmpegX and do all my conversion there, and it was horrible. It was a terrible application. It would let you choose combinations that were not possible. I almost said physically impossible, but it's not really physics. It's just, this codec could not handle that set of options, and it just had no sense of that at all. And it truly was. I may as well have learned the command line version of this application, which later I discovered I could do by opening up the executable for this horrible GUI and just extract and just dragging out the FFmpeg binary that they had embedded right into their executable, their .app file, and you could then just ./FFmpeg and run the thing from there. And it was a lot easier to use from the command line, to be honest. So it was a horror. Yeah, so I've definitely seen, that's what I'm trying to tell you. I've definitely seen these applications that are really poorly designed. And I sympathize. I totally sympathize with this. But we mustn't fail to understand that this is an example, and there are other examples, but I think that any of us, if you're listening to this show, you probably have used enough open source application stuff to know that, well, it's not quite true. They are not all designed by committee and or designed by an engineer or whatever the derogatory way of talking about these things is. They're things that sometimes occur because someone, the person who happened to throw this thing together, happens not to be all that great at design. But it happens. But I want to talk about some other things too, because there's an application out there, and you can search for it. It's called GitHub Desktop. And yeah, it's desktop.github.com, according to this. Yep, it is. Okay. So, if you've ever used Git, the application, Git, from a terminal, from a Unix terminal, then you know that there's, well, you may not know. You may not understand this. I know, and several other people know, that it's a beautiful application. It truly, truly is. And you may have had bad experiences with it, because you're not, you haven't really learned it all that well yet, and you don't have your head around it quite yet. I don't know. But I think it's a fantastic application. I really do. It's a truly beautiful application that works really, really well, and it's just marvelously designed. It's one of my favorite applications of all time. Git is just a beautiful, beautiful terminal command. So the GitHub Desktop application, because for some reason, you have this great command line application, and so for some reason people think, oh, well, we have to come up with a GUI version because no one's going to know how to use this thing if we don't do that. And it's funny because GitHub itself, the website, the non-open source website, existed before their desktop.github.com application existed and people were using it. So they clearly felt the need to kind of deliver their special sauce to people on the desktop as a desktop application, even though it was obviously being used by people from a command line. It was being used by people even through their website. You could do certain things through their web. You still can. You can create new files, text files anyway, from their website, type it into a text field on their website, and then commit it and add it and commit it and push it to that repository, all from within their website. So I mean, they'd already practically, they'd made so many concessions already for people who maybe wanted to work on something in a Git repository without learning Git. And so then they come out with this desktop version of their a desktop client for Git. And now this again, this application comes out after several other Git desktop clients already exist. So you've got things like Git Cola, and that's really the only one I can think of off the top of my head that is any good. So if you go to git-cola.github.io, it's actually a really, really nice little application. Like if you're being asked for a GUI client for Git, look at Git Cola. It's legitimately a good software. It was written in Python. It's Python 2 and 3. It works in either. And it's really, really solid. It's absolutely a good website, good client. And you should go to git-cola.github.io because it's worth looking at. And you can take a look at the screenshots. You don't even have to download it. It's a good little application. So, nevertheless, GitHub client, GitHub desktop, I think is what they call it. It comes out and people start downloading it. And I was one of the unfortunate people who had to use it in a class that I was assisting in. I was helping teach Python to small kids, 12, 13-year-olds, 11-year-olds probably. And so I did this for like 2 terms, which in New Zealand means 2 semesters. They do their semesters, their school semesters happen like 4 a year, I think. There's no summer break. You just get breaks between each term, like a 2-week break, and then I think over Christmas you get 4 weeks or something like that. So it's totally different, but it's, in other words, I was doing this class for half of a year essentially, and I was just assisting. I wasn't doing the teaching. But I had to, that means I had to go around to these computers and help kids commit stuff to GitHub through GitHub Desktop. And I have to tell you, it was one of the most frustrating, ridiculous experiences of each day was dealing with this application, GitHub Desktop. Because they, I mean, you can look at the thing. If you go to GitHub, no, desktop.github.com, you can look at screenshots of the thing. And it is, on the surface, like if you look at it, it doesn't look like a horrible application. You can kind of see, so sort of what they're going for, but it's just there are certain things about it that will just blow your mind if you know anything about Git. So, what they've done is they create these 2 different tabs, and in one tab are your changes, and then in one tab is your history, and that sort of makes sense in a way, like that. I kind of get it, sort of. And the problem is though that people get confused, you know, and they can't figure out when the changes have happened, and what to do once the changes do happen, because there's almost like the update policy just doesn't seem to be that consistent. So like you might make a change and then you look at your changes tab and it doesn't reflect that change yet. And I don't know why that is. I don't know if it's something in the OS not pinging the application correctly or what it is, but that seemed to be a problem. And then even if you look beyond that, there are these concepts in Git, right? So you've got when you make a change to something in Git, what you do to then sort of put that file into staging is you do a git add. So you would do git add foo, for instance, and from then on, the file foo is acknowledged. It has changed and it has now been set aside on the shelf for eventual pushing to the remote repository. Or committing and then pushing, I should say. So in GitHub Desktop, there aren't those different stages of a life cycle of a file. So you might change a file and then it eventually shows up in your changes tab, but that doesn't actually mean that it is sort of added, yet. It's actually an untracked file, but there's no sense of it being either untracked or added to your staging. So that's quite confusing for someone who knows Git and is now trying to help someone use Git desktop client, because there's the relationship between what's actually happening on a, in the application of Git versus what people are seeing on the GitHub desktop are just completely two separate things. And that right there struck me as very, very interesting, because like you can argue whether that's good design or bad design, but in terms of sort of troubleshooting and understanding what's happening, and even just kind of the philosophy of, well, I'm going to provide you a GUI, it's just kind of, you have to stop and think, well, how many levels of abstraction are actually okay for me? Like, is this a good idea to take something that's happening behind the scenes and to put this many layers of obfuscation in front of it? And I'm not convinced at all that that's a good idea. Now, I could see, for instance, I'm not saying I wanted, I don't, I'm not wanting this, but I could see, for instance, let's say that you have a Git, you have a three column sort of structure in your GitHub desktop, in your imaginary GitHub desktop client, And so in the far left, maybe you have your untracked file. So I've just created a file called foo. Git doesn't really know about that yet, but we can see that it exists in this folder. So we'll put it in the far left column, and that will be and we would call that untracked. Now, what a user might be able to do then is move foo over to the second column. So now we have foo listed not in the first column but in the second column, and we would call that add, ADD. So that now it's been added, or we could call it my staging area if you wanted to. That's fine too. Either of those two labels would work. And in fact, maybe you could have a button that would take it from the left to the middle column, and we could call that button add. So you select your file that you have just created and you add it to your little staging column. So now you know that it's staged. Maybe you don't know what that means exactly, but you have this sense that things are moving from left to right. And then on the far right column, you would have your committed list. So once you've added something, and then once you hit push, the button labeled push, then it would go into your committed column, meaning that that's what you've got on your remote repository. Or something like that. I just came up with that off the top of my head right now. Point being, you'd have some sense of the life cycle of that file, and you could even say, well, I know that I have foo in my staging area. It's not in the committed column yet, so I'm going to move it. I've decided I'm not ready yet, so I'm going to move that back to my untracked column, or whatever. And you would know that if you did that, then you're removing it from your staging area, and you're sending it back to being untracked, and all your most recent changes are not going to be committed now, or whatever. So in this GitHub desktop, you've got this severe abstraction from the idea of untracked versus added files. And now you've also got this thing, this button up in the upper right corner of your Git desktop GitHub client that says publish branch. Now, publish is a great word for lots of things, and it appears absolutely nowhere in the Git jargon. If you go to a terminal and look at all of the different options and all of the different phrases that it throws around, and believe me, there are many. I mean, to the point that people joke about it. There's a joke site called Git, I don't know, Git Syntax or something like that. And it's very funny. It's a fake. It's a false Git. It's a false Git command generator. So it gives you all these ridiculous fake Git commands. It's hilarious. It's funny. We take it in good humor, not a problem. But nowhere in any of the Git stuff does the word publish appear. But for some reason, GitHub Desktop Client decided that when they want to describe to new users that they are sending their files from their local computer up to GitHub remote repository, they're going to use the word publish. Now understand that that's possibly fine for new users who don't know the commands and don't understand any of this anyway. The word publish, kind of makes sense, right? Now, in a different client, they had it called sync, I think, SYNC, and that kind of makes sense too. But again, in terms of Git terminology, neither of those terms are the terms that we use. In Git, you push. That's the term. That's the phrase. That's the big one. You're pushing something from your local computer to a repository. That's what you're doing, and that's all that you're doing. There's no publish. There's no sync. It's a Git push. So, and again, none of this has even the GitHub Desktop Client. None of it has actually talked about the word commit. So there's not really you're not really there's no sense of what a commit is, you know? Like what is I mean there is a button that says commit to the branch, but and you can type in your commit message, although it doesn't call it a git message, but or a commit message, but so you, there is a button that kind of hints about the word commit, but it doesn't there's no sense of what exactly is happening when you write a commit message, and why that's significant, and then when you do publish, what's happening with that. So if someone who knows Git really well is telling you, okay, well, push your changes, what does that mean? Oh, I mean publish your changes or sync your changes, depending on which version of GitHub Desktop Client you're using. So I'm ranting too much because I hate it, and it has affected my actual real life hobby, which is helping people understand computers. But the point that I'm actually trying to make, aside from this being a horribly designed application, is that sometimes really bad design isn't the classic, oh, there's too many buttons in this window, or it looks too blocky, the widgets are unattractive. It goes so far beyond that. There are applications that look perfectly fine, but if you look at them with even just a little bit of crucial thinking, critical thinking, you realize that it's a horribly designed application for a completely different reason. And I would say, in terms of GitHub Desktop Client, it's a horribly designed application because they've just taken a whole world of prior knowledge, thrown it out the window, so as to make the communication between those who know and those who don't know as complex and meaningless as possible, and then furthermore, completely crippled the new users from then going backwards from this friendly, gooey introduction back to something that's a little bit more, maybe arguably less friendly. And we're assuming here that the terminal is automatically less friendly than a GUI because that's the cliche. So they're taking what could be a learning tool and turning it into a stumbling block. It's just horrible. It's just the worst. It's the absolute most grievous error you could make, I think, in when designing something for humans. It's just a terrible, terrible thing. And I hope that someone at GitHub hears this show for some unknown reason. I don't know why they would be listening to this show, but that would be great. And actually, if they are, try open sourcing your platform. But anyway, that's what I wanted to talk about, sort of, is that, yeah, the UX design problem is not necessarily all about the shape of your widgets. It goes far, far beyond that. And as a good comparison, if you're really curious about a GUI Git client, seriously, look at Git Cola. It's pretty nice. What's even funnier about all that, though, for me at least, is that Dolphin, the KDE file manager, has Git integration enabled in it already, and it's super, super nice, and a lot more flexible, and makes a lot more sense, frankly, than most of the other clients out there. So that's kind of humorous to see as well, that it can be just like this little add-on to something that already exists, and it's brilliant. And really elegant, really, really, really nicely done. So that's my thoughts on design. Bad design, good design. Don't let looks be deceiving. And I know that probably a lot of people listening to this don't actually have that problem, because a lot of people listening to this are using open source pretty much all the time, and or as much as you can, and you're probably used to function over appearance. And once you start realizing the power of function over appearance, your world opens up. You're just you suddenly you just realize that just because someone used what is it, Tickle, for their widget set, not really that big of a deal. Or what is it? It's not Tickle, that's the language, right? TK widgets or something like that. Not that big of a deal that's what they chose. It can still be a hugely powerful application. But I guess more than that, the idea is that design has to be smart enough to not get in people's way. I think at the end of the day, that's the thing. Don't get in people's way, and you're probably on the right track. Hey, I think that's it for this show. Thank you for listening. And where can you find me? Well, you can email me at klaatu@member.fsf.org. That is member.fsf, as in Free Software Foundation, .org.